Good morning.
Good morning, Senator.
I think most of you know the story of Buddha. He was raised behind the walls of his father's palace and lived in luxury. He had everything that he needed, everything that he could need. But he was restless. There was something missing. So eventually he snuck out of the palace grounds and went into the world and saw the suffering that existed. And that was the first step for him on the path. And so he became an ascetic, and he meditated and stayed by himself. And eventually he achieved insight. And there's that famous picture of him standing on Mount Gratuku. Anyway, he was standing on the mountain, and he holds up a flower, and he twirls the flower. And that was a symbol of his enlightenment, right? And this big crowd of people. And that's how he showed his insight. Just simply held up a flower. And there was nothing more. That was enough to say. Not even say, but to show. And so that's where Buddhism began. But as Buddhism evolved, the Buddha realized that living in luxury or being an ascetic fell short of a true practice. And that's how the middle, what we call the middle way, developed. The middle between luxury and the middle between being an ascetic. So it's interesting, the history of Buddhism, as Buddhism unfolded, and Buddhism became grounded in the practice of meditation, which in Zen we call Zazen. And that, as Buddhism passed through time, the emphasis on meditation began to drop away, and it fell more on ritual and community and stuff like that. So meditation fell away. And this practice, Zen Buddhism, was a response to the dying out of meditation. And so that's where Zen Buddhism became an offshoot and was focused on meditation. Now, the other thing that happened over time is there was a, you know, this is when Zen Buddhism got to China. Asceticism was something that appeared quite often. There were monks who grew tired of living in a monastery. And so they left the monastery and they went up into the mountains. And they lived and practiced by themselves and became deeply connected to nature. But they lived outside of mainstream society. A lot of the famous teachers, the Bodhidharma, who began Zen Buddhism, meditated in a cave for 9 years. And a lot of the famous poets, Ryokan and Stonehouse, etc., all lived in seclusion. Now, apparently some of that, or most of it, was the attraction to being alone and focusing on one's own personal practice. But there's another side story, which is that the Zen Buddhists were persecuted, and so a lot of times they fled into the mountains. But the real focus of going into the mountains, though, was personal practice. Now, many of you are familiar with this koan. It's called the 100-foot pole. And very briefly, it says, it's a question. What do you do when you get to the top of a 100-foot pole? Now, the 100-foot pole is a metaphor. Right, we begin on the bottom of the pole, we get to the top of the pole, which is enlightenment. And so what do we do? What do you do when you get to the top of the 100-foot pole? Well, the original answer, the more traditional answer was, you keep climbing, which means there is no end to practice. Enlightenment is not the end. We keep practicing. And another way to see this koan is that what do we do when we get to the top of the 100-foot pole? Well, we don't remain an ascetic. We don't remain in a practice just for ourselves. We step off the pole back into the world. And you could say that by stepping back in the world, we live the life of a bodhisattva. And Kuan Yin was called the mother of compassion. She was the metaphor in the Buddhist history of the mother of compassion. And it was she who hears the cries of the world. And it was said that she manifested herself in whatever way was necessary to serve any particular situation, anybody who needed help. Now, this is a quote from Christina Feldman. Again and again, we are asked to learn one of life's clearest lessons, that to run from suffering, to harden our hearts, to turn away from pain, is to deny life and to live in fear. So one of the things that's required from a bodhisattva, one who has stepped off the pole, and by the way, you don't have to get to the top of the pole to step and live in the world. Not all bodhisattvas are enlightened. In fact, it's said that a bodhisattva forgoes enlightenment to stay in the world and suffering of others. So what's required to be a bodhisattva, to live a life of a bodhisattva, is to learn how to live with an open heart. And an open heart means when our heart opens, we're no longer attached to ourself, what in Zen we call the small self, this identity that we carry around that's defined by a bunch of traits. Now, it's not throwing that away, that self, but it's seeing the self beyond the self. And that's the self that expands to take in the entire world, right? We realize that we are not just this simple, isolated self, but we are the world, we are the universe itself. And that's where compassion arises. If we are everyone else, how could we not have compassion? How could we not want to be in service of this greater self? Now, this bodhisattva concept, this bodhisattva practice, is not something romantic. It's very simple, very practical, very everyday. And we see many examples of it. I think in this most recent school shooting, one of the teachers laid down on top of a student to protect that student, right? So that teacher was not wrapped up in himself and his own survival. He was open-hearted. His awareness expanded beyond his personal self. And so he protected another part of us, right? Which was this child, this young person. There are the neighbors who have just retired. And they have this whole life plan about what they're going to do in retirement. Travel plans and visiting kids. And all sorts of other things, courses they want to take. And next door, and this is a true story, by the way, and next door is a family of four. A mother who has terminal cancer, whose husband, the father of the children, deserted them. And three children. I think it's 15, 12, and 7. And she dies. And so her kids, there's no family, her kids are left by themselves. So these neighbors forego their plan for retirement and take in and raise these three kids. Well, they're bodhisattvas, right? Who they are extends beyond their particular self, their own particular plans for what they wanted to do. And that's being open-hearted. And then recently, I saw this video. And it was about naturalists that were, I forget where geographically they were. But it was a place where black bear, they proliferated this area. And there was one black bear that kept leaving the forest and coming into the town and creating disturbances and was a danger to people. So what they did was they located the bear and they shot him with darts that tranquilized. Thank you. And they tranquilized the bear. And the bear didn't just fall to the ground. He started meandering around and he went into this lake. And he began swimming, but because he was tranquilized and because he was becoming more and less and less conscious, he started drowning. Now this bear was like 275 pounds. And one of the naturalists jumped in the water, swam out, and grabbed this 275-pound bear in a headlock, and he swam the bear back into shore where the other naturalists came in, and they all dragged him out. And then they put him in this bucket loader thing, which is like a tractor, and they lifted him up, and then they brought him out into the woods and make sure that he came out of the tranquil state. But again, that's a bodhisattva that appears to offer themselves beyond themselves to this particular situation. Now, those are dramatic examples of bodhisattvas. But so do bodhisattvas appear in our everyday life. You know, how often have you seen somebody take an elderly person by the arm and help them cross the street? That's a bodhisattva, a very simple act. They don't appear in the newspaper or on television, but they are acting with an open heart, with compassion. Person walking down the street, and ahead of them, sitting on the sidewalk with a little sign, "Please help me," and a hat facing upward, is begging for money. Right? They're homeless. So you see people back and forth, no contact at all, no eye contact or anything. And then one person appears and stops and says hello, looks this other human being in the eye and says hello. Right? Just that human contact, and has a brief chat and then puts a few dollars in the hat and walks on. Well, that's a bodhisattva. No fireworks, again, no newspaper articles, no TV attention. Just the simple act of compassion, of being a human being that functions outside themselves. This is a little story that involves the Dalai Lama. A few years ago, an elderly monk arrived in India after fleeing from prison in Tibet. Meeting with the Dalai Lama, he recounted the years he had been imprisoned, the hardship, the beatings he had endured, the hunger and loneliness he had lived with, and the torture that he had faced. And at one point, the Dalai Lama asked him, "Was there ever a time that you felt your life was truly in danger?" And the monk answered, "In truth, the only time I felt truly at risk and felt in danger was when I felt in danger of losing compassion for my jailers." That's compassion beyond the self, in really the most extreme of circumstances. So I'm going to read a poem, and it's called Boulevard Bodhisattva. "Each evening, the old fellow across the street steps out from his porch into the descending darkness. He lights the lamp that illuminates a path. He knows the round silence of night. He knows these are burning days. People stroll by, but don't notice the light, even as they walk through it. He raises his hand in welcome and offers food and drink, but few come. But still, he sweeps the dusty steps, mends the creaky boards, leaves the gate open, and then goes inside to stir soup and cut bread." So this is the Boulevard Bodhisattva, the old man who lives on the street across from us. But he is on the path, and he wants to share that path with others. Right? So he lights the lamp of illumination. But most people don't notice, even as they walk through it. Now, I forget which of the chants this is from, but it's the same thing as saying, even though you walk on it, you do not see it. So here's this guy, right? He's an ordinary guy. He mends his porch, he sweeps the path, he makes soup and cuts bread. But at the same time, he's extending himself. Now, this is a metaphor for the bodhisattva. Right? But the bodhisattva has the wisdom to know you can't force people to step onto the path. All you can do is make the path available. You can light the light, you can extend a hand, you can leave the gate open and ask that person to come in. But each one of us is the one that determines whether we enter that path. Right? But the bodhisattva knows this path and what it can mean to everybody to step onto this path of the bodhisattva. But again, as I said, he has the wisdom to know that you can't force people. All you can do is leave the gate open. All we can do here is leave the door open. So that's the story of the bodhisattva. So anyway, this poem, which I love, was written by Sensei Chichetti, the empty bowl Zendo. So I got his permission to use it for a talk because I really love the talk. Well, thank you for listening.